Omaha Public Radio presents another program from Film Streams, Omaha's nonprofit cinema on Noon Forum. On today's program, we'll hear a panel discussion which followed a screening of the 2013 documentary film Best Kept Secret, directed by Samantha Buck. This program, presented in collaboration with the Meyer Foundation and the Ollie Webb Center, was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Tuesday evening, April 22, 2014, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the panelists and do not necessarily represent those of Film Streams, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. The members of the panel, moderated by Mary McHale, president of the Meyer Foundation, will be Shauna Frodema, transitions coordinator with the Omaha Public Schools, Kathy Kowalskis, a parent of an autistic child, and Kim Hall, employment services manager at the Ollie Webb Center. In Best Kept Secret, a New Jersey teacher, Janet Mino, struggles largely unsuccessfully to prepare her students with autism to survive in the world that awaits them once they graduate. JFK High School, located in a rundown area of Newark, New Jersey, is a public school for all types of students with special education needs, ranging from those on the autism spectrum to those with multiple disabilities. Best Kept Secret follows Ms. Mino and her students over the year and a half before graduation. The clock is ticking to find them a place in the adult world, a job or rare placement in a recreational center, so they do not end up where their predecessors have, sitting at home, institutionalized, or on the streets. Here now to introduce the program is our moderator, Mary McHale.
We are a nonprofit. We're an entirely all-volunteer board, and what we do is we raise funds for recreational programs for teens and adults with developmental disabilities. We do that through a grant process. So this year, some of the grants that we granted was there was a cooking program at Monroe-Meyer Rec Therapy Department. That's for adults. We granted a staycation program, again, for adults who attend rec therapy programs at MNI. We've been a loyal sponsor, half sponsor, for the Next Chapter Book Club, which is a program out of the Ollie Webb Center, Inc. So that's a great program, and that's for individuals with developmental disabilities 18 and above. We did, there's dancing classes that are going on now. So we have a grant process. And if you are associated with a nonprofit, you're more than welcome to submit a grant. Our cycle starts, I'm looking at Kim, our cycle starts in September. Grants are due in October. We decide in November and let everybody know in December what's going on with them. So you can go to our website. How we fund all of this is through two major fundraisers that we have every year. One that we just had was the Walk and Roll for Disabilities, and that's traditionally held on the first Sunday in March. This year we were out at Oakview Mall, which is a new place for us. The other one is the Owl Ride. Has anybody heard of the Owl Ride? Got some bikers here. That's good. The Owl Ride is Omaha with Lights, and it's a nighttime urban biking adventure. We start at 10 o'clock. It's the hottest Saturday in July. Doesn't matter if it's the first or hottest Saturday in July. The route starts at 10 o'clock. We start at Lewis and Clark Landing. There's a short route, which is an 8-mile one, and then there's a 16-mile one. So there's cards out front at a table. There's also some brochures from the Ollie Webb Center, Inc., out at the table out in the lobby, so please be sure that you stop and do that. Welcome. Two of our panelists are Shauna Frodema, and Shauna is the transition coordinator for Omaha Public Schools. So she runs, manages the programs for those teens with developmental disabilities ages 18 to 21. And Kathy, I'm going to butcher your name, so I apologize. And we have a parent here, and her first name is Kathy. And she has an adult child who's on the autism spectrum. So Kathy's going to give us some insight and talk about her journey. We have Kim Hall from Career Solutions. Career Solutions is a program out of Ollie Webb Center, Inc., and what they do is work on community employment for individuals with developmental disabilities out in the community. Shauna's going to talk about, here's 18 to 21, which is what this film talks about, the last year in these three individuals' lives. And it's a film for anybody who has a child with a developmental disability and they're getting ready to turn 21. Doesn't matter if they're on the autism spectrum, doesn't matter if they have a hearing impairment, doesn't matter if they have Down syndrome. It's those same fears and struggles that all of us have as parents. What's going to happen when my child turns 21 and ages out of the educational system? I thought what we'd do is first start off and have the panelists introduce themselves, brought them here, and kind of a quick snapshot of the movie. I was completely depressed. So, a lot of work to be done between when your child is born or diagnosed until they turn age 21. So it never gets easier, unfortunately. So I'm going to turn to Kathy.
I'm Kathy Kowalskis. I'm the mom of an autistic child. Young man, he's 25 years old. I look around the room and I see a lot of people that have had a lot to do with him through the years, and I was very surprised when I came in and saw that. And we wouldn't have gotten where we did if it wasn't for the help of a lot of the people that are I see here.
Okay, I'm Shauna Ferdima. Can you hear me? There we go. I'm Shauna Ferdima, and I'm the transition supervisor for the Omaha Public Schools, and I've been a special educator in the Omaha Public Schools for 21 years. And Mary is someone that I've known now for about the past 7 or 8 mm-hmm. years, I think. About that.
Hi, I'm Kim Hall, and I'm the Employment Services Manager for Career Solutions at the Ollie Webb Center. We have a supported employment program, and in the film, I was very emotional, but just identify with the challenges mm-hmm. that are out there. So, sorry, I don't mean to get so emotional.
That's right.
I always cry at movies. It doesn't matter what kind of movie it is. So this was really hard.
We'll open it up to questions. Does anybody have a question? If you can raise your hand so they can get the microphone to you.
Or responses to the film, too.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it showed, again, how much work and... You can have great teachers, and which is great because that's what we want for all of our children. But that cliff comes at age 21, and even if you have the best laid plans and you have your teacher going out and looking at all the different things, it's so hard. And I would think some of that's based on funding, maybe in dollars, and maybe Kim, you can talk to that about generally how those things are allocated once they turn 21.
Yeah, it's very important for families to get together to really come up with a plan for what's going to happen, because at that age of 21, I talk to a lot of parents who right before somebody's going to graduate, it's the first time that they've thought about it, and that is way too late, unfortunately. We need to educate. We were talking about this earlier. Parents on just even how they go about finding resources. Funding for our services come from HHS Developmental Disability Services, and we also work through vocational rehabilitation to provide our services. So I work really hard if there's not one funding source available to try to figure out another way that we can fund it. But that planning really needs to start happening before, you know, graduation is a month away or a mm-hmm. few weeks away. So I think that things are getting better and that parents are realizing that they need to do that. But it really, you know, it depends a lot about the transition program and how much information is involved. But if you are not connected to that information, then please seek it out. The Ollie Webb Center can help with, you know, providing resources and things for you to go, places to go to get the answers that you need.
I just want to say that my experience in special education is actually 20 years as a middle school teacher. And so for those of you that are parents of a student with special needs, you know that the middle school years, well, special needs or not, the middle school years are crazy years, okay? And as a teacher, my job was to basically, I felt at times, those IEP times, I was hitting the parents in the face with the fact that your child was disabled and would continue to have a disability. We went through those elementary years, and then it's middle school, and I would talk to parents at those IEP meetings about the future. And so when you're talking about parents at the end, getting close to graduation, just beginning to have those conversations, I know that there's teachers that are having those conversations and trying to plant the seed in the parent's mind that you need to start thinking about the future. When they were talking about, do you have a will? That's something that I would bring up. Now, at the middle school level, I didn't have to develop a transition plan because those kids were young enough that that wasn't required, but I could still have the conversation with the parents. And that's something I think all educators try to do, at least in the district that I'm from. I can speak on that behalf. Now I jumped through those high school years, and I went right into transition, and I by no means claim to know everything you need to know about transition, but I'm trying to learn. And in talking with Kim beforehand, this is where transition teachers and high school teachers need an opportunity to work together to learn about those services so that in those IEP meetings, we're able to give parents some more information. We can say things like, here's a number to call, but parents, you do have to make that call. I can't make that call for you. But try to listen to those teachers and take the information that they do give you and then try to make those phone calls. There's good people out there to help you.
A few things. I'm not sure about the dynamics of the audience here. I anticipate that there's probably a good amount of people who have children who haven't hit adulthood yet. So I just want to give you a little bit of reassurance, as my son is 23, that I just want to take a little bit of issue with what you started with. That film obviously was hard. I feel the same way as Kim. I cry at Disney movies, so yeah. But it doesn't get harder all the time. I just want to give a little sense of that there are, just like with any children, there are some things that get easier as an adult. I mean, we get to go to the bar together now, right? So, but I do have one question specifically, and that is, what do you consider the first starting point? Is it the Department of Health and Human Services? Is it Voc Rehab? We had a plan, and like all good plans, it went awry, so now we're on plan, what is it, D. And it gets confusing. What is number one, do this, number two, do this, number three, do this? Is there a 1, 2, 3, and what would you suggest?
So I would think, when they're 18, you want to apply for SSI, and you have to wait until their 18th birthday if they qualify?
I would say there probably isn't a 1, 2, 3. Mm-hmm. It depends on what your goals are and the individual person that you're working with and what they want to do, because that kind of shapes then where I think you need to go as far as what to do. So, there's sometimes a debate among, does everybody need to get on SSI? Mm-hmm. I don't know that they do. It depends on what their goals are and how that comes together. So if they are, if they want to pursue employment, which, I'm very passionate about employment first and that everybody who wants to work should be able to work in the community. So for me, that's the kind of goggles that I look through. But it really needs to, you really need to look at what your child wants to do, and then I know this isn't helping you, but
with employment. So what would your 1, 2, 3 be?
Vocational rehabilitation is a short-term support. Just the way that they're funded, they can only provide support for so long, and then the person really needs to figure out a way to be independent. Whereas, if you're utilizing DD services and you're using them as employment as a priority, then that often allows you more extended support. So depending on what the needs of the individual are, if it's just that they need help at the beginning with getting the job and training a little bit at the beginning, and then they're going to be able to be independent, then VR might be the way that you want to go. But if you need long-term support and you know that this individual is going to need that, then definitely you would want to seek out, DD funding or some other long-term solution.
Hi, sorry. I'm the new transition coordinator at PTI Nebraska, and I also have a son who's on the spectrum also. But I'm curious to know, I know you stated that it's up to the parents to make that first phone call to begin services, but a lot of parents don't know, especially parents in minority. Parents don't know where to go, where to turn to. Do you reach out to those parents? How do you let them know the services that are available to them? I know it's very difficult for African Americans to reach out because of the culture plays a part into it. And if you don't speak English as, you know, as your first language, it may be difficult for them as well. So what do you guys do, or do you suggest for parents who aren't who are considered minorities and not the majority and don't know what's out there?
And I'd say Caucasians have the same issue. They don't seek out. They don't know what they need to know. So I'd like to say that minorities have the whole, you know, lock on that, that they don't get the services, they don't get the word out. No, there's not. Teacher,
well, actually,
hello.
I wanted to ask Kathy to maybe address, how did you go about finding the resources that you needed?
I think in our case, the school system was the godsend. I was told my son was autistic before he was 2 years old. And to immediately get in contact with the school system, because I would get information and support and such through them. And this was right at the end of the school year, and the concern was that we would lose too much time if we waited until the fall with him, even though he was not quite 2 years old yet. So to find a speech therapist on our own that summer. And my son didn't talk then, and anybody that knows him now wouldn't believe that, because once this woman got him to say something, he hasn't shut up since. But this, all along the way, I really think that between the school and DD services, they've sort of given me the information and pushed me in the directions that we needed to go.
And shouldn't you start transitioning? Doesn't Rule 51 say something that you should start that transition planning, or talk about employment, what's going to happen after senior in high school when they're 16?
Yes.
And if your child wants to attend those IEP meetings, they can attend at any time, but especially, you know, 14, 15, 16 and above, so that when you talk about goals and you talk about what things that you want your child to be able to do, part of that discussion, I think it's state law. Once they turn 16, you should be talking. So school districts, whoever holds your child's IEP, that person should mention, so they're going to turn 18. What do you see? What kind of things?
That
are there jobs
something
that they like to do? Are there?
Right. And that is something that is required, you know, like you said, by law, the state of Nebraska. It doesn't matter what district your child might attend. There is a transition plan, and the students are to be involved in that. The first section of it is what are the wants, what are the needs, what are the interests of the student. So the person to fill that out that knows that is the student. And that doesn't matter, Caucasian, African American, Korean, it doesn't matter. In the Omaha Public Schools, there's over 100 languages spoken, and we have interpreters, we have ways to get people there to help interpret at any of the IEP meetings. And so that starts at a very early age, and then it is repeated and updated each year. It's not that it's done once and then we just carry that over, because everyone's interests changed. I might have wanted to be a, you know, truck driver when I was 16, and then I changed later on and decided to be a teacher. So that's what the transition program continues on with, that in the Omaha Public Schools, 18 to 21, and then we just try to continue reinforcing to parents to make those connections of those services. But again, as a teacher and as a school system, we can't make the call for the parent. The parent has to make that call.
And I would say in the movie, you know, a principal or whoever was talking at the end said it really well, in that you have to be an advocate for your child. And if you feel like you're not getting the answers that you want, then keep asking the questions, go other places and ask questions, because somebody's going to help you and have the answers. And if, you know, if where you're at doesn't have them, then keep asking.
I'm actually from Dallas, Texas. And
I grew up
here.
You get the centerpiece for coming the longest way to see the movie.
Yeah. Anyway, it's good to be here. My daughter's 8 years old, and she's low-functioning autistic. And the experiences that that I've had in Texas hasn't always been ideal. One of the things is, and I think it was mentioned, you know, is it about money? Yes, it is about money. And when you start looking at what it costs to adequately educate a child with autism at an early age, you may be looking at $30,000 or $40,000 if you have them in a, you know, behavioral-based program and stuff. I know a private one where they have one therapist and two students is $92,000 a year or so. The school districts walk into it and they go, okay, well, let me see. We put them in life skills. Oh, that'll be about $16,000 a year, and it won't be the $30,000, you know. And if you carry that over, you know, the life of the school years all the way on up until they do turn 21, you're talking about maybe almost $500,000. And they don't, you can't say they don't notice that, because they do. And I've seen where they've made every effort they could, you know, to make sure that they don't have to spend that extra money on them. And I've seen two school districts do it. I've seen, one of the largest school districts in the country, which would be Dallas, and then a suburban one, one of the richest school districts in the country. They both did it, you know, and they had their priorities, you know, let me tell you. You know, I know the one school had a $43 million stadium, you know, football stadium. And when you asked them, you know, if they could, you know, provide some software so my daughter could, you know, learn to talk, and they look at you and they go, do you know how much that cost? And you look at them and you go, yeah, $189. You know, and you just feel like you just pulled one of their teeth, you know, and it's just... And the problem I really think we're going to have, though, is looking out forward. You know, right now our federal budget and deficits are actually being reduced, and the next couple years are supposed to be a big uptick, and we're going to have to start taking care of the baby boomers. You know, so unfortunately there's going to be less and less money, and they're going to try to squeeze and squeeze more, you know, from the social service budgets that they have right now. And I was looking at a figure the other day, and Americans, if they're making $50,000 a year, they're only spending $36 in food stamps a year. That's all that, you know, that's what tax money would go, and another $6 for all the other support, you know, systems that we have in place. And then, interesting enough, $6,000 would go to big corporations and subsidies and budgets and everything else. So the money's there. You know, I really do believe that. But, you know, I think you're going to see all kinds of different types of forces, you know, pushing on that. Personally, what I think should have happened, maybe, now it's possible, I guess, to diagnose a child at birth by looking at the placenta. You know, see how many folds are in it. And they're supposed to correlate 90-some percent, and it's University of California, Berkeley, I believe that's doing that research. But if the schools weren't only responsible for a child up until 21, but had to be responsible for life outcomes and be graded and tested and so on and so forth and rated like you would a school, you know, I think we'd have a different system. You know, I think you'd see the schools right away going, oh, go, boy, we got to get these kids early. We got to, you know, we got to see when they're diagnosed. We need to talk to the pediatricians. We need to, you know, start teaching the parents how to interact with their child early so they don't lose skills, you know, before we get them. So we have something to work with. You know, probably what we've seen up here was the result of those children not having early intervention, you know, possibly. But our research says that the earlier the better, you know. And I know, and both me and their mother were, you know, were in the healthcare field, their mother being a nurse practitioner at Children's Hospital, me being a respiratory at a hospital. I know we weren't told early what to do, how to do it, how to interact or anything. When my daughter's in school and she has special ed teachers and you ask them, well, what do you know about autism? They knew nothing. They said they needed autism 101. You know, I'm like, oh, great. You know, we had speech therapists, too. They couldn't motivate. Much like they said in there, unless you know how to motivate that child, they're not going to test well. You know, and that's what the school uses sometimes to give them a low IQ. You know, say, oh, you know, their IQ such, they can't learn. You know, and then that's when they throw them in the life skills class. And I know my daughter got like a 13% of identifying stuff. And then, you know, after about a year of her having, of them having her, they give her an iPad, and she, like 90-some percent, you know, in accuracy identifying words. And so here they have her at a real low IQ, you know, when she's really capable. But there was not a motivating factor. ECI, which is, is that early childhood intervention? Is that what the federal program? When a child's identified with an issue at a very early age, they come out and they work with your child and stuff, which is great. But if they don't have that skill set either for motivating or getting a child to do something, I've seen a lot of money wasted there too. So I think we have a long ways to go. I think we need to identify children early. I think we have to get the proper resources there. I think we have to look at the funding. I think we also have to look at the best way to have accountability too, you know, in the school systems and in pass that into their adult lives. And, you know, how we set that system up, I'm not real sure, but I know there's a way of doing it. And that's what I'd like to see. I believe in what they call person-centered thinking, which is, okay, I'll finish this up. But person-centered thinking, if anybody has an opportunity, but the University of Texas at Austin, Texas A&M, but it revolves around the idea of having a whole person, you know, their bottom line being the institution or maybe even a daycare that doesn't do anything with them, all the way to be working and then have a good support system around them of family, friends, and work and everything else so that they become, you know, a full person, and a productive person. So
a couple things. Each state has their own parent training institute, so that is a valuable resource. The one here in Nebraska happens to be located in Omaha, and I think they have some satellite offices across the state. So if you are from another state, do a Google, look for your parent training center in your state, and they can help you. Here's what your special ed law says. Here are the things. We don't get the Cadillac of services, but typical kids don't get the Cadillac of public education either. It's just the way it's funded. The second thing, tell your United States senators, tell your United States Congress people to mandate IDEA so that it's fully funded. And that's where the money comes from. The money comes from Washington. So Social Security is a mandate. So they get a certain amount every year and they get cost of living. I think IDEA only reimburses maybe 21, 22 cents on the dollar, gives extra for a student with a disability because it's not a mandate. So every 4 years, everybody goes back and says, yeah, we want to fund it, but we don't want to raise any money. So that would be number two, that you inform, get with your elected officials and say, fully fund this. Have the United States government make good on their pledge that they made in 1975 when IDEA was enacted as a law to fully fund it and to make it a mandate, because then the dollars will come. I believe early intervention is great for all children with disabilities, not just the children on the autism spectrum, but if the child has cerebral palsy, if they have Down syndrome, if they have a hearing impairment, if they're deaf, the earlier that you can get in and get your team start working with them. And you're a member of the team too. And we're fortunate. I'm Omaha Public Schools, had my go rounds with them, would never be in another school district because I love the diversity and I'm able to work with my team. Do I get everything I want from my son? No. Should I get everything I want from my son? No, because I want the Cadillac, so we meet in the middle. But they've always been very receptive because I'm an equal team member. And I got those skill sets from attending classes and training at PTI Nebraska. So it's free. Do a Google. See what's available in Texas. Here in Omaha, they do a lot of webinars. If I'm not mistaken, I don't know if you can call up and talk to somebody on staff there or not. But you are your child's advocate, just like the movie said. And if you don't know what your rights are as your child's advocate, sometimes, close your ears, sometimes school people have a lot to think about, and they have a lot of IEPs. I get that. I'm lucky. I only got this one kid, so I'm really committed to having him have the best education that's possible. So I do my research. I do, because I want a life for him when he turns 21. And it's a lot of work. It doesn't end. Because you advocate for your child, and depending on what your child's disability is, they might not be able to advocate for themselves and do that kind of stuff. But find out your PTI in your state. They are great. We have two staff members here from PTI Nebraska, so, and there's other ones here in Omaha, but they're great. And then fully fund IDEA. Mm-hmm. Shauna?
Just real quick, just remember that your school district, whatever district your child is in, they always hold family nights. I mean, OPS did, and we had PTI, we had lots of organizations there. We had Goodwill, we had Ollie Webb. And it went from services from early childhood clear through transition. And you need to attend. It's free. And so that's where you're going to become informed. That's where you're going to make connections. That's where you're going to meet somebody that might be able to answer a question that you have, or even bump into a parent that's been through it. And so it takes you as a parent showing up to these organizations, these free opportunities. Take advantage of that, and you'll become informed, and then you can argue with the best of them if you need to. Yeah. Right, Mary?
Yep. Well, I like to say it's a conversation, but it's not always. Have your child do top soccer. Have them do Challenger. Have them do Special Olympics, because you sit there and you're waiting with other parents for your kid to get up and hit a ball or just be done, and you start having conversations. And my son was in speech, and that's how I found out College of St. Mary here in town did adaptive swimming. Found out from a parent. So it's those informal, just like with your typical kids, that they're on a team, they're involved in something, you're sitting in the stands talking, oh, really, do you do that? Where do you get that? When you talk to those other parents, you find out all that information also. And sometimes some of those connections lead you, you thought you were going this way, but no, this is really a better path for my child. And so what do you do for your kid on the spectrum? I never thought about that. So district can't do everything. They do a lot. Not saying everybody's perfect, not saying I'm perfect, but we're there when we sit at the table to have the best experience for my child for the next school year. So
I just want to add, the Ollie Webb Center does a whole lot of different things, and one of the programs we have also is parent-to-parent. Mm-hmm. So, if you have a younger child who has a disability and you don't know a lot about what to do or where to go, parents who have already been through those stages with those children can be it's kind of a mentoring program. So that's a good resource, like Mary was saying, just talking to other parents.
And then, Kathy, so your child's a little bit older, so chances are when he was diagnosed, it was maybe kind of a wasteland out there because it was a relatively new diagnosis and a lot of people didn't know what it was, what it did, all that kind of stuff. How did you?
I think we were fortunate because we're in the Millard School District. And like I say, right from the start, mm-hmm. we had people there that were involved with him and working with us, and he was in school from the time he was 2 years old, so that's what he thought you did. You got up and you went to school. It was not an issue, but he was just in school forever, and I don't think without that early intervention he would have been what he is now, or back then even. But it seems like one person leads to another person. So the speech therapist led us to another speech therapist, and they, it was just one person after another that they all become part of the puzzle.
I guess I had two main questions. One, someone made a comment earlier that I thought was interesting, and I don't know if they or anyone else in the audience or in the panel would want to speak to. What are some of the challenges in minority communities in Omaha as far as getting people to come forward to get the help or assistance or anything they might need for someone in their family who might have special needs, like how does that present, or and in what are ways in which people trying to be helpful and do outreach can be sensitive to those concerns or to any of those issues? And then the second question, I guess, is on a broader scale. Politically, I mean, you guys mentioned IDEA, mm-hmm. The legislation. Is there anything else as far as advocacy at the legislative level that people can be doing, like either locally or nationally? So I guess those are my two main questions.
So one thing you can do is there's something, I don't know how many signers, co-sponsors they have yet. It's called the ABLE Act, Achieving Better Life Expectancy. And what it allows, it's kind of like the College 529 Act. So parents can put money in a 529 account for their kid to go to college, and it's not taxed. The ABLE Act will allow parents, godparents, grandparents, sisters, brothers, cousins, whatever, to put money in this child's account, and it doesn't count against their Social Security, so they aren't penalized, and it can be used for going on a trip, buying deodorant, buying, you know, whatever, anything that you can use it to buy a house for your child, if that's what you want. And then when your child dies, it goes back to the state. So it's like win-win, you know. And I think all of our Nebraska senators and Congress people, I think, signed on as no. So who hasn't signed yet, Denise? So I think it's Adrian Smith.
Yes, there's two in Western Nebraska that haven't signed on, but the three in the metro or in this district area have. And it is actually the 529. It's a part of the 529 mm-hmm. plan, and so all that money can be put in there. It can allow a person to work competitively at a competitive job, and their job, their paycheck can go straight into their ABLE account, and it can be withdrawn for any kind of expenses that are disability related. It can be for assistive technology, transportation, housing, clothing, what have you. And so a person can have up to $250,000 in that account before your Social Security would then stop but not be suspended. So you could continue to then qualify for Medicaid, which then, of course, qualifies you for disability RDD services.
So you don't have to have a special needs trust. So that's what the ABLE Act is. Great.
Right.
So you don't have to have a special needs trust for your child, because that's not – can't move from state to state and take your trust with you.
That, and if someone has to manage a special needs trust on their behalf, this allows them to directly withdraw the money on their own and use it for their own expenses. And then there is a caveat. You can transfer that money to another person in your family if the individual is no longer on this face of the earth. However, then, if they do not have that option, that can go to a member of the family if they have a 529 account. And otherwise, it then goes back to the Medicaid system.
So the question about outreach to minorities, I don't know if Graciela, if you want to address that.
If we are talking about the Spanish-speaking population in Nebraska, the main barrier they face is the language. I mean, there's a lot of resources. We as PTI members know about a lot of resources in the community. The problem is, I tell them, give them a number, they call, and they do not get anybody who speaks English. So those are the barriers for the Spanish-speaking population.
I think the African-American population is lack of knowledge. I know with myself in particular, when my son was, when we realized he was on the spectrum, you begin to feel ostracized. You don't feel like you have the support of the community because you don't see a lot of advertisement about various events or various resources that are available to you. And I think those are the two major barriers for the African American community in particular.
Okay. Thank you. Question?
I have a question. I used to work as an employee assistance counselor with a large corporation. And what would happen is somebody would call and they would have a child who was autistic. And also the child had behavior problems. And the insurance companies would not help them because they said it was an organic kind of thing. And so they people would be extremely stressed out, because what they would have to do is go to a psychiatrist or a psychologist and pay the full amount, $90 per session, things like that. And yesterday, or this morning in the paper, I read where Governor Heineman signed a bill stating that insurance companies in Nebraska have to cover treatment for autistic children.
But I don't think all companies have to. There's caveats. So if you go to the Obamacare, you're buying your own. They don't, and maybe you're more knowledgeable, Kathy.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at. Yeah. If you work for some company and you have their insurance has to pay. But because Nebraska has chosen not to go along with Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, they have excluded. Nebraska is one of those states that chose not to do that. One of, I don't know how many states it is. But I don't know enough about how they rejected the qualifications for people who are of lower income, so that they can't get this. They don't qualify. Their insurance does not qualify. It has to come from a company, and that's the way I understand it.
Yeah, and I don't know, Lori. Are you more familiar with what he signed into law on Monday? Okay.
Well, it's real important, and I think if people out here who have an autistic child and they need mental health treatment, it's something to be very aware of. So, thanks.
We have a comment over here. I just want to say I have a daughter who is 28 and has a developmental disability. And I think one of the things that I thought was well noted in the film, and amongst some other people here, is that as parents, we have to continuously advocate for our kids no matter what. It is vital that I'm still very much a working mother when it comes to advocating for my daughter, because it cannot stop. If you want the services for your kids, your young adults, you're going to have to continue to advocate. She and I started that early on in school. I went out and got her first job, her first volunteer job, and I could not get the school to do the things that I felt that she needed, and that what she wanted was to work in a hospital, but they were taking her to Walmart and every other place except the hospital. And I think, you know, you as the parent really, really, really have to be intense as far as advocating. And I'm still doing it to this day, and she is in a residential setting also. So it doesn't matter whether it's vocational or residential, you're still advocating.
All right, I think we'll wrap up. Sorry, the questions, because I know the staff wants to go home, and we appreciate all of their help. It's been a long day for them. If you want to come down and ask one of the panelists a question while you're going out, that is fine also. And again, thank you, everybody, for coming. So thank you, and drive safely.
You've been listening to a discussion program from Film Streams, Omaha's nonprofit cinema on Noon Forum. On today's program, we've heard a panel discussion which followed a screening of the 2013 documentary film Best Kept Secret, directed by Samantha Buck. This program, presented in collaboration with the Meyer Foundation and the Ollie Webb Center, was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Tuesday evening, April 22, 2014, for broadcast at this time. The members of the panel, moderated by Mary McHale, president of the Meyer Foundation, were Shauna Frodema, transitions coordinator with the Omaha Public Schools, Kathy Kowalskis, a parent of an autistic child, and Kim Hall, Employment Services Manager at the Ollie Webb Center. Special thanks to Rachel Jacobson, Patrick Kinney, Molly Welch, Hallie Sharkey, and Jim Foyt of Film Streams for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 400 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.